welcome to Life Before Vinyl on Resonance 104.4 FM. This is Adrian Tuttenham, and I'm going to be your guide for the next few weeks as we ramble through a miscellany of sounds from the forgotten past. When the vinyl record became popular in the 1950s, millions of older records were consigned to the junk shop, and with them went three whole generations of music. I'm going to trawl through those junk piles and find out what sort of music was available before vinyl swept it away. To start with today, I've chosen something from a genre of music that was very popular throughout the first 50 years of the last century. This is a novelty piece written by Neil Moray in 1904. He specialised in light descriptive music and novelty pieces, and never fails to delight with his compositions. Whenever Moray's name turns up on a record, you know you can't go wrong by buying it. This record is no exception to that rule. It's played with gusto by the International Novelty Orchestra, which was actually a small group of studio musicians. Although the label says this catchy tune is just entitled Poppies, the full title of the piece is Poppies, a Japanese Serenade. Neil Moray's Poppies, played by the International Novelty Orchestra and recorded by Xonophone in January of 1931. A really good example of a high-quality electrical recording. Before 1926, electrical recording was impractical and commercial recordings were made acoustically. The horn, which concentrated the sound onto the recording apparatus, added its own characteristic honk to all the recordings and gave them a distinctive but false sound. Only recently has it proved practical to remove that honk electronically and hear the performers as they actually sounded. With this new treatment, the three earliest decades of recording history have now become accessible in a way which was not possible before. Let's go right back to the very beginning of the gramophone, to hear what the earliest recordings were like. Thomas Edison had pioneered the wax cylinder phonograph for recording sound, and was already achieving some excellent results when the disc gramophone was developed by Emil Berliner. Technically, the cylinder had some advantages over the disc, but discs were easier to store and handle and appealed more readily to the public, despite their inferior sound quality. Edison was basically an inventor, with a wide range of interests, so when others moved into the sound recording field with more aggressive marketing, he switched his attention to other matters. Eventually, the disc ousted the cylinder, but it took nearly 30 years to do it. We'll be listening to some cylinders in a later programme. You're listening to Life Before Vinyl on Resonance 104.4 FM. On July the 1st, 1898, an event took place which seemed trivial at the time, but it was to set the scene for sound recording across the world for the next 100 years. The liner Umbria set out from America, bound for Liverpool. On board was a young man called Fred Gaisberg. For the past 7 years he had been an assistant to Emil Berliner, the inventor of the disc gramophone, and now he was on his way to bring this marvellous invention to England. With the help of William Barry Owen, a salesman, he set up a recording room in the cellars of an hotel in Maiden Lane, London, and began producing recordings for the British market. Thus began the international recording giant HMV, which later became EMI. By the autumn of 1898, the recording room, they didn't call them studios in those days, was producing a string of recordings of popular singers, bands, orchestras, West End shows, recitations, descriptive pieces, anything that might sell to the public. The actual master recordings were remarkably good, even at that early stage, but the quality of the copies was variable, and the record material was definitely rough. Here is one of those early Berliner recordings from the autumn of 1898. It's an extremely rare record, and I'd like to thank Alistair Murray of Highbridge, Somerset, for loaning it to me. The tune is from the immensely popular show The Belle of New York by Gustav Kircher, which had opened in London that year. The record doesn't have a paper label, so the title, The Belle of New York Waltz, is stamped onto the centre. The tune is actually called When We Are Married. When We Are Married, from The Belle of New York, recorded by IFF's Orchestra of Glasgow in the autumn of 1898. It's interesting that this recording was issued despite the blemish of a false note at the end. Fred Gaisberg was running the organisation on a shoestring at that date, and probably couldn't arrange a retake or afford the extra wax recording blank it would have used. If you'd like to hear more music from the Belle of New York, you can download it as a MIDI karaoke file by searching on the internet for Edwardian Musicals Karaoke. You're listening to Life Before Vinyl on Resonance 104.4 FM. The next item was recorded by Edison Bell, a company ruled with a rod of iron by James E. Huff. He was an extremely forceful personality and used every opportunity to tell the public that his products were the very best and entirely British made, neither of which claims held up under close scrutiny. The quality of Edison Bell's popular record, The Winner, was quite variable. So was the recording speed. Generally, records of that era were standardised on playing speeds of 78 or 80 revolutions per minute, but Winners ran at anywhere between the low 70s and the mid-80s. On their worst pressings, this hardly mattered anyway, because you only got the vaguest impressions of the performance. The sound was heard through a thunderous roar from the rough playing surface, and when electrically reproduced, massive thumps and bumps from ripples and dents in the metal plates used to press the records. Unlike other pressing plants, Edison Bell initially used hand-operated screw presses, like book presses, working on metal tables heated by steam or gas burners. The working conditions at the factory in Peckham have been described as like a cross between a Roman galley and the engine room of a coal-fired battleship. From this hell on earth poured forth a stream of recordings which probably represent the lower-class popular music culture of the day better than any other research resource. Listen to any Edison Bell winner and you'll be immediately transported back to another era, another culture, and another concept of sound quality. To show the sort of popular material Edison Bell issued, I've chosen a jolly little song, The Jingaboo Man, by the Two Bobs, recorded in May 1919. They really were named Bob, Robert Lee Alden and Bob Adams, and they added over 30 comedy songs to the Edison Bell catalogue between April 1915 and March 1922. This musical cautionary tale is a warning to children not to investigate rustling noises in the bushes at night.
When I was a little bit of baby, when I was about so high,
what happened, boy?
My mammy used to tell me a story
about
a bold bad man up in the sky.
Ooh.
And every night when shadows were a-creeping, and round our house the stormy winds they blew, I'd creep up to her knee, and then she'd say to me,
say,
here's a story about the Jingaboo. Oh, he's got the great big shiny eyes, he's got a great big mouth and thighs. He walks like a piston like that, he eats up all the kiddies what's fat. He comes out only at night, then he's robed in a nothing but white. Oh, run, run, run as fast as you can, and hide yourself away from the Jingaboo Man.
One night when I was come across the meadow, just about a mile from home, yes, but then I heard a rustling in the bushes, and then I heard a low, low, low. I started for my home and mammy flying, boy, I run that mile and nothing on his truth. And as I reached the door, the mammy eyed it wrong.
What you say, buddy?
Ma, I believe I see the Jingaboo. He's got great big shiny eyes, he's got a great big mouth and eyes. He walks like this and like that, he jumps for the killing one fat. He comes out only at night, and he's drove him nothing but noise. Run, run, run as fast as you can, then I'm just up away from the Jingaboo Man.
Great big mountain
side.
Walks like a distant like that. fat. He comes out only at night, and he's robed in a nothing but white. Oh, run, 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 as fast as you can.
And hide yourself away from the king of blue man.
Jingaboo Man by The Two Bobs. This is Life Before Vinyl on Resonance 104.4 FM. It wasn't very long after electric recording had become the norm that quite elaborate experiments were being conducted in sound mixing and other production techniques, things we take for granted nowadays. One of the masters of elaborate sound mixing was Joe Batten, an accomplished musician who started as a piano accompanist, became recording manager for Edison Bell, and eventually finished up with Columbia. Although not credited on the label, it is most likely Joe Batten who was behind this next masterpiece, which was recorded by Columbia in February 1932. It contains an interesting attempt at the use of a distant echo mic, and evidence of extensive dubbing and editing, which was all done in real time by fading in sound from a bank of turntables, each playing a different disc. The composer, Albert W. Cattelby, was well known for his descriptive orchestral pieces such as In a Persian Market and In a Monastery Garden. This piece is less well known, but interesting nevertheless. It is In the Mystic Land of Egypt, played by Charles Prentice and his orchestra.
Thank you.
In the Mystic Land of Egypt by Albert W. Cattelby, released by Columbia in 1932. The label says that the orchestra is with vocal effects, but doesn't actually give a credit to the singer. Several people have suggested it might have been the popular baritone Raymond Newell. But whoever it was, I wonder why they didn't want their name put on the record label. We're coming to the end of this week's programme now, so I think I'll end it with something really silly. The Children's Toy March by the Regal Orchestra. I really don't know much about this record, except that it was released in the autumn of 1922. So this is Adrian Tutnam on Resonance 104.4 FM, looking forward to having your company again next week for another trawl through the junk piles, searching for clues about life before vinyl. Thank you.